Good evening from a chilly Minneapolis, Minnesota, where the warm glare of the national spotlight is now on this American city. The murder trial of Derek Chauvin, now in the hands of the jury.
Tonight in the heart of Minneapolis, a city waiting with bated breath. Residents hunkered down, businesses boarded up for whatever comes next.
We're very worried. You know, the intensity is right now is hype. The world is watching this, and so this is a world event.
What will you be doing, what will you be thinking as you wait for that jury to come back with a verdict?
People were already on edge. A lot of us have seen this before.
From the intersection of 38th and Chicago, George Floyd Square, the place where he took his last breath, now a shrine to who was lost and what was learned.
This space is a memorial, not just to George Floyd, but it's a memorial to all the names that, as a community, we desire to acknowledge and uphold because we believe that their deaths are unjust.
To the courthouse on South 6th Street, now the epicenter of a local murder trial with national implications.
This wasn't policing. This was murder. The defendant is on trial not for being a police officer. He's on trial for what he did.
Beyond the reasonable doubt, it is the highest standard in the law. I submit to you that the state has failed to meet its burden of proof beyond a reasonable doubt.
With closing arguments wrapped up in the murder trial of George Floyd by former Minneapolis police officer Derek Chauvin, all eyes now turn to the jury room.
The power is now all in the jurors' hands. They've got to consider not just, is Derek Chauvin innocent or guilty, but also, if they do think that he is guilty of a crime, what crime should that be? I would not expect that this would be a very quick deliberation.
This court case, one of the most awaited since the Rodney King trial nearly 30 years earlier.
We went through the crucifixion of Floyd. Give us a resurrection with this jury so that people will know that justice can happen.
In the courtroom today, after 3 weeks of arguments, both sides making their final pleas to the jury. Prosecutor Steve Schlesher imploring jurors to trust their eyes.
This was not an accident. That force for 9 minutes and 29 seconds, that killed George Floyd.
Defense attorney Eric Nelson retorting.
A reasonable police officer would understand this situation. Okay, that Mr. Floyd was able to overcome the efforts of three police officers while handcuffed. The failure of the state's experts to acknowledge any possibility at all, that any of these other factors in any way contributed to Mr. Floyd's death defies medical science and it defies common sense and reason.
But Prosecutor Jerry Blackwell, in a scathing rebuttal.
You were told, for example, that Mr. Floyd died because his heart was too big. And the truth of the matter is that the reason George Floyd is dead is because Mr. Chauvin's heart was too small.
During closing arguments in court today, it was the first time for a prolonged amount of time that the jury got to see Derek Chauvin without his mask. There was sort of an audible gasp when he took his mask off and all the jurors did look at him.
Chauvin faces three charges for the death of George Floyd. Second-degree unintentional murder with a maximum 40-year prison sentence. Third-degree murder, 25 years maximum. And second-degree manslaughter, 10 years maximum. Judge Peter Cahill giving very specific instructions.
During your deliberations, you must not let bias, prejudice, passion, sympathy, or public opinion influence your decision.
I would be stunned if there was an all-out acquittal. I would just be shocked if 12 jurors were unanimously deciding that there was reasonable doubt in this case.
Regardless of what the verdict is, the impact is already being felt here at George Floyd Square. Blocks barricaded, traffic cut off, violence on the rise.
It was such a sense of lawlessness going around, like, you know, people carrying guns and things like that. And it was very, very frightening for customers and business owners as well.
Sam Willis Jr. owns Just Turkey, opened in the wake of George Floyd's death just down the street from where he was killed.
This neighborhood was a flourishing area before all this happened. We have elderly people trying to come and eat our food, which is hard for them to get into because of the blockage of the streets.
Willis and several other business owners in the area formed the 38th Street Black Business Collective. These stores have lost more than 75% of their revenue over the past year.
Y'all have a good day. See you soon.
We wasn't receiving any funds. We weren't receiving any security for this area. The police wouldn't come in this area at all. Ambulance wouldn't come in this area. Fire departments, things like that. It was very overwhelming not to receive the services that our tax dollars are paying.
Authorities have vowed to increase law enforcement's presence at the intersection. And despite the city council's approval of forgivable loans and a $500,000 donation by the Floyd family to local businesses, some are now praying more will be done.
God had this happen here.
Pastor Curtis Farrar leads worldwide outreach for Christ Church.
How has the church changed since George Floyd was killed across the street? And how much has the neighborhood changed?
I've noticed the change as far as a lot of people. The church has grown. I, as well as everybody else, is on edge.
On edge why?
A lot of us have seen this before.
In many ways, the Derek Chauvin trial has been personal for Pastor Farrar. Like Floyd, he too moved to Minneapolis from Texas years ago in search of a better life. Floyd's death triggering memories of his own encounter with police decades ago.
I remember myself being beaten within an inch of my life. And they cracked my skull, and my brain was swollen up. So I remember this one cop, he just didn't particularly like me. But boy, they started to beat me.
That night, changed your life? Changed the direction of your life?
It really did. That experience led me to ministry. And boy, am I thankful. I look back on all of that now, and I understand what people are going through. George Floyd, his folk, the people out there in the neighborhood. And this is why I believe that God has allowed me to experience that same kind of a situation. I could have been gone years ago.
And I asked God to please.
Saved by grace, sobered by grievances, generation old. Pastor Farrar believes the jury's verdict will signal either a step forward or spark a new season of unrest.
I think people are on the verge of rage anyway. The emotions are between rage and anger. And people are losing faith in the justice system.
Is it fair, though, Pastor, to put the burdens of the racial divide and tension with policing on the backs of one trial involving one police officer?
No. But I think he should be on trial. The justice system, when we all have looked at it, we see exactly what happened. We saw that this man was already handcuffed, and he wasn't resisting.
And now, like his parishioners, all he can do is wait and pray as the jury will return to continue deliberations Tuesday morning.
If we're going to have the communities that we're looking for and desiring, the love for one another that all around the world is looking for, it is going to take the power of God to change our hearts.
Fortunately or unfortunately, all we have this week is the legal system.
You're absolutely right. And what I'll be doing on a Monday night is praying for the legal system. That's all I got left. That's all we got left is God. Nothing else has worked in years past.
Hey, I'm Andy Mitchell, a New York Times bestselling author.
And I'm Sabrina Kohlberg, a morning television producer. We're moms of toddlers and best friends of 20 years.
And we both love to talk about being parents, yes, but also pop culture.
So we're combining our two interests by talking to celebrities, writers, and fellow scholars of TV and movies.
Cinema, really.
About what we all can learn from the fictional moms we love to watch.
From ABC Audio and Good Morning America, Pop Culture Moms is out now wherever you listen to podcasts.
Minari, It's the Oscar-nominated film An Independent Hit, bringing together an international cast while telling a uniquely American story. Here's my Nightline co-anchor, Juju Chang.
They're the unlikely dynamic duo attracting Oscar spotlight.
Pretty boy.
73-year-old Korean legend Yeo Jung-yoon and then 7-year-old newbie Alan Kim stealing scenes in Minari.
I'm not pretty, I'm good looking.
The low-budget indie film pierces through with the struggle of a Korean-American family who moves to rural Arkansas, toiling in a chicken hatchery to pursue their version of the American dream.
How's your daddy like that new farm? He growing things good, doing things right?
Yes.
Minari, a metaphor for the resilient Korean herb that can sprout in the most difficult conditions.
My character doesn't like the grandma at first, but throughout the movie, she starts growing on him.
The film, nominated for 6 Oscars, including Best Picture, Best Director, and Best Supporting Actress for Yoon.
It's unreal to me.
Strong boy.
But the grandma and grandson portrayals already winning awards around the globe.
Alan Kim Minari.
Little Alan, with 0 prior acting experience, melting hearts at the Critics' Choice Awards.
Is this the truth? Who is Alan Kim?
Meanwhile, Yoon has earned numerous trophies and accolades over her 50-year career in South Korea.
Yeah, Jung-yoon.
But her blunt humor went viral after the BAFTAs, known as the British Oscars.
British people, known as very snobbish people, and they approve me as a good actor. So I'm very, very privileged and happy. I admire them very much. And I was just kind of 3 in the morning, I was thinking, with lack of my English, I was saying it like that.
Every piece of emotion were smushed in together into one.
What are you looking forward to most about going to the Oscars?
Winning.
Alan isn't nominated for an Oscar, but his director, Lee Isaac Chung, is nominated for both director and screenwriter. Chung wrote the script based on his own childhood in Arkansas and his own grandmother, hoping to reframe the American dream.
It's not about the hard work and success. It's about the sacrifice that everybody makes. I wanted to highlight my grandmother and my mom and even my dad in the factories, you know, the sort of work that they did when they're very much invisible, the work that they were doing out of love.
I'm curious if you think about sort of representation and the Asian American experience.
I'm wary of creating films that are merely about representation. It's a story about family. It's a story about redemption. It's a story about many different things. And this family happens to be Asian, but that's not the reason why this story has to exist.
Written in 2018 as his sort of farewell to Hollywood, Chung was preparing to leave the industry after a modest decade in film.
I didn't know if it would do anything for my career. So I was trying to put everything I was feeling into it just so that I would feel like I didn't leave anything behind.
Did you have any idea that it would become this big a deal?
Of course not. No, there was a part of me that just thought this screenplay is just going to sit on my computer and one day I'm going to let my daughter read it when she's older just so she can see like what I was working on when I was younger.
That all changed when his script landed in the hands of producer Christina Oh, a fellow Korean-American, whose partners include Brad Pitt, Dee Dee Gardner, and Jeremy Kleiner at Plan B.
It's like the power of his script. Like, we read it and we're so moved.
What makes it so powerful?
Feeling like, oh my God, somebody understands like how I grew up. From like the grandmother visiting and bringing like bags of Korean spices and dried anchovies. I've had a lot of people reach out to me and be like, my grandma was the exact same way. It was just replace the dried anchovies with, you know, X.
Oh also insisted the Korean dialogue stay in the script. And with that green light, Oh and Chung hit the ground running, scrambling to start production in 3 months.
We had less than $2 million. There's something about making something with very little money and very little time. You're there because you love the material. Because by no means did anyone get like any sort of payday on this.
The film was shot in 25 days under the hot Tulsa, Oklahoma summer sun, much to the distress of its biggest star.
The first day, the AC went out and It's just a mess. So, but looking at Isaac, he was all sweating, and I'm over 70 years old lady. I'm very temperamental when he and I'm upset, but he was always calm, and he always say, "I got it." That was, to me, was the most beautiful sound from the director.
If I lose my cool, then the ship is going to sink in some way. So I just knew that I had to keep it together and keep it in control. I grew up seeing her in a lot of TV shows and movies. She herself is so lovable, unpredictable, funny, irreverent. So there was just nobody else who could do this.
Yoon has two sons and is a grandmother herself, which may be why she instantly connected with Alan, who plays her grandson.
When you are little, you don't understand. You are very ignorant.
Even in her 70s, she can't forgive herself for how she treated her great-grandmother, a Korean War refugee.
She used the water, you know, reuse it again because of water shortage. Then to me, she was dirty, so I don't like her. She passed away long, long time ago. And now still it's breaking my heart. Every time we're talking about my great-grandmother.
That empathy and humanization so deftly portrayed on screen has made her a front-runner for Best Supporting Actress.
It is rewarding your instincts to go with your gut and not go with the biggest paycheck.
I'm old enough. The money or fame is not important. People, my friends, is important.
Oh, it's spectacular.
As for her young co-star, he'll be turning 9 just before Sunday ceremony.
Happy birthday to you.
Safe to say, we all know what he just wished for.
And finally tonight, a vice president who made history. Walter Mondale passing away today at his home here in Minneapolis. He served in the Senate for 12 years, later becoming Jimmy Carter's vice president. He made his own run for the presidency, losing in a landslide to Ronald Reagan, but making history, selecting Representative Geraldine Ferraro of New York as his running mate, the first female nominee to run for vice president. Walter Mondale was 93. From Minneapolis, that's Nightline for this evening. You can watch our full episodes on Hulu. We'll see you back in New York, same time tomorrow. Thanks for the company, America. Good night.